So it's time for AIG and the taxpayers to part ways.
Yeah, but how will this breakup happen?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hi, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the Midday Update from Marketplace.org, and today is Wednesday, September 29th. Striking and protesting workers in Europe want the budget cuts to stop. The bullet train could get you to Boston from Washington in 3 hours flat. And if you're in the mood for Vegas, at one hotel, you better bring the sunscreen, maybe SPF 400.
Yes.
But first.
The government is trying to clean up one of the biggest messes still left over from the financial crisis, the bailout of what used to be the world's biggest insurance company, AIG. Today, officials from the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve are meeting with AIG's board to consider an exit plan. Marketplace's John Dimsdale is with us now from Washington, D.C. Hi, John.
Good morning, Bill.
What is the government trying to accomplish here?
Well, the government still owns 80% of AIG. The insurance company got multiple government bailouts, which means there will have to be a lot of complicated transactions to make it independent and to recover the $130 billion that's still owed taxpayers. To pay off its part of the debt to the Fed, AIG is selling some of its non-government-owned assets, and Treasury stake in AIG, $50 billion worth, will be converted to common stock and sold.
So our government will be in the stock-selling business?
Scary, isn't it? And if those stocks are sold too quickly, it'll flood the market and dilute the value of the shares, and then everyone, taxpayers, policyholders, private shareholders, stand to lose. So it's going to take a while, probably more than a year, to get rid of the government shares.
So if it's going to take so long, why this flurry of activity now?
Well, the Obama administration wants to show that it's doing all it can to extricate the government from the bailout of the banking system. They want to show voters before the election, of course, that there still is a plan to get most of taxpayers' money back.
That's Marketplace's John Dimsdale from Washington. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Bill.
Well, debate could start today in the U.S. House on a bill that would pressure China to increase the value of its currency. The measure would make it easier for the U.S. to slap tariffs on Chinese imports. The idea is to make Chinese products more expensive so American companies can compete. But some American business groups don't like the idea. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Supporters of the Currency Reform for Fair Trade Act say China keeps its currency artificially low. That makes its exports much cheaper than U.S. products. U.S. manufacturers can't compete. But some U.S. businesses are afraid the bill could start a trade war. Stephanie Lester is with the Retail Industry Leaders Association. She says many U.S. retailers are opening new stores in China.
And we don't want to see those market opportunities in China harmed by increased tensions with China over currency.
Lester says if the U.S. ratchets up the pressure, China could retaliate against American retailers. The American Soybean Association is also worried. Bob Callanan is the association's spokesman.
And China is our number one soybean customer. So we are very concerned about Congress doing something to interfere with our trade.
This week, China increased duties on imports of chicken from the U.S. just days after a House committee approved the Currency Reform Act. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, September 29th. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers inside our website, marketplace.org. We're going to get a take now on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects us here in the United States. Tens of thousands of workers across Europe are staging strikes and protests today. They're angry about government budget cuts in several countries. Labor unions say the rallies are among the biggest ever. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
How coordinated is this day of protests there?
It's very much so. Up to 100,000 workers from right across the European Union have taken part or are currently taking part in a mass protest in Brussels. Meanwhile, there's a general strike in Spain today and more protests in Greece, Poland, Italy, Ireland and elsewhere. What all these workers are saying is they don't want the job cuts and the pay cuts in the public sector that are happening as a result of budget cutting by their governments. Here's one union leader, David Cockcroft. This is what he told the BBC.
No one's saying that they have to stop all cuts, but the cuts have got to be negotiated and they've got to be angled towards creating decent jobs. Because if we don't, then we are going to have a real crisis. The double-dip recession will come.
Why, Stephen, are protesters marching on Brussels?
Because a lot of the pressure to cut budget deficits, to rein back public spending, is coming from the European Commission, not just from markets, but from the Commission, the executive body of the EU based in Brussels. And today, in fact, the Commission is discussing a new plan to punish EU member governments that don't keep their finances in order. So the Commission clearly is now a target for disgruntled public sector workers who are saying no to austerity.
Mm. All right. Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
OK, Steve.
Meanwhile, Stephen mentioned the European Commission announcing plans today to stop member countries from overspending. The BBC's Rebecca Singer has details of the plan now and how it could punish those who borrow too much money.
The move follows the Greek debt crisis that threatened the future of the euro, and the EU wants to come down hard on any country that may threaten the stability of the eurozone in the future. Governments that fail to comply with strict limits on budget deficits and national debt will be fined, and countries whose economies are veering out of control, like we've seen in Ireland and Spain, will have to show how they plan to get back on track. Carsten Breski is senior economist at ING Belgium and says steps like this are necessary to restore confidence after the Greek fiasco.
Yes, I think. I think right now it's really we have this window of opportunity to do something and to implement measures and to show that Europe has learned its lessons from the sovereign debt crisis. So I think they're going to be effective.
Europe already has a system of fines in place, but this will simplify the process so countries can't wriggle out of punishments as easily. And the EU Commission believes that a stable economy is the best way to keep jobs safe. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, September 29th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Amtrak has released its 30-year vision for high-speed rail travel along the busy Northeast Corridor. The government-funded rail company says its plan would cost around $4 billion a year. Reporter Alex Goldmark looks at what that money could buy us.
Trains would zip along at 220 miles per hour and get you from Boston to Washington, D.C. in about 3 hours. That's a transformational vision, according to Amtrak's Mark Magliari.
The thought of being able to travel from, let's say, Philadelphia to New York over your lunch hour and get there in time within the same lunch hour is something that just doesn't happen right now.
The real motivation isn't a cheesesteak power lunch. It's Amtrak planning for population growth. Magliari says the system will be over capacity by 2030 without a serious revamp. Plus, it's an investment, according to Robert Puentes of the Brookings Institution.
You really could create a high-speed rail network that is generating revenues and is helping to pay itself back.
But with penny-pinching in Washington, it may be a while before a vision like this gets a serious look in Congress. In New York, I'm Alex Goldmark for Marketplace.
You know, the Grateful Dead sang a popular song about a train. And for millions of Grateful Dead fans who witnessed their music live, it was more than just a concert. It was a world unto itself.
It was a happening.
Yes, it was. All kinds of things from the illusional to the illegal were being sold, bartered, and branded at those shows. Well, in a new book, one author looks at the band as business model. Brian Halligan co-authored Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead. He's with us now. Brian, welcome to Marketplace.
How are you?
Doing well. So when I think of the Grateful Dead, I think of counterculture, and I think of drugs, and I think of reckless abandonment. I don't, however, think of marketing and this big business model. I mean, what did you see?
Well, I went to over 100 concerts, and I was struck by, boy, there's just hundreds of thousands of rabid fans, and they follow them across the country. And I was like, the Grateful Dead are brilliant marketers, and they do things in a very counterintuitive way from a marketing perspective.
Now, you weren't going to show after show and saying to yourself, wow, what brilliant marketers. I mean, you obviously had a draw to them. You were listening to the music. You were sort of enveloped into the scene. I mean, when did this dawn on you that they were such great marketers?
Yeah, I'm a big Grateful Dead fan, and I'm a big kind of marketing transformation fan. What I noticed about the Dead is they're kind of what I call the world's first inbound marketers. And what inbound marketing essentially is when you create lots and lots of content, whether it's blog content or ebooks or videos, and each little piece of content you create becomes like a magnet for potential customers. It pulls them in via Google, blogs, and social media. The Grateful Dead were kind of the world's first inbound marketers because they allowed people like me to come to their shows, and they encouraged us to record the concerts. And when we recorded the concerts, we made copies of those tapes, spread them to our friends. Those copies pulled in new fans, and each copy of the show was like a mini magnet that pulled in new customers, essentially, for them to their concerts.
What kind of lessons have businesses today learned from what the Grateful Dead did so many years ago?
They really broke down the barrier between themselves and the fans. The fans were almost part of the concert. And I think that's what modern business owners should do, is with the internet, you should break down the barriers between your company and your fans or your customers and be much more interactive. Gen X, Gen Yers don't want this high barrier between the company and themselves. They really want a collaborative, interactive relationship, and they want to be part of the creation of the product in the business.
Brian Halligan, author of the book Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is on its way. It's coming down the tracks like a train. This is the new agency designed to help make sure banks and other financial companies deal straight with their customers. While bureaucrats are busy setting up the rules, bank lobbyists are trying to water them down. So says Los Angeles Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. Hi, David.
Good morning.
First of all, let's remind listeners how this Financial Protection Bureau is supposed to help or affect consumers.
What it's going to do is it's going to consolidate the watchdog activities of about a half dozen different government agencies all into one that will oversee mortgages, credit cards, payday loans, all manner of money stuff that affects consumers.
And how are financial companies trying to shape these new rules?
They're in the meat and potatoes phase, which means they're devising all of the rules and regulations that will provide the rules of the road going forward. That's where bank lobbyists are very busy right now, trying to give banks and lenders and other financial services companies as much wiggle room as possible for business as usual.
And where are the key wiggle points right now?
Well, right now they're trying to make sure that the credit card reforms, for example, are going to have enough latitude to allow these companies to maintain fairly lucrative business practices such as late fees and, you know, overdraft and all those sorts of things.
And what do you think the agency's new leader, Elizabeth Warren, will do to counter those lobbyists?
Well, what they're saying right out of the gate is the credit card reforms are first and foremost. She needs to make sure that these are effective and strong and take away some of what some have called abusive practices by the banks, and to do it quickly. After that, you kind of get a mixed bag. For example, predatory lending. Some advocates say she needs to focus on that. Others say mortgages are a key thing because of the housing market. She needs to streamline the mortgage process.
And why are these activists so concerned about quick, quick, quick?
The advocates I spoke to said Elizabeth Warren has about 1 year to prove the mettle of the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Otherwise, if she can't show that it's effective and efficient, people will start saying, oh, waste of money, bad for business. And the Republicans, who have been very active in saying this is a bad thing, will step up and say, look, we told you so. So she's going to have to come out of the gate with guns blazing.
Keeping an eye on these consumer reforms for you, LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. Thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, the Las Vegas Review-Journal reports owners of the new Vdara Hotel are discovering that the building's curved glass focuses the hot rays of the Las Vegas sun right onto the hotel swimming pool.
Indeed hot. And if you're an aunt, you're familiar with this issue,
yes,
right? Hotel guests are complaining that when they lie in the wrong spot around the pool, well, they suffer severe burns.
The hotel says it is working on a fix. They might also want to apply for a clean energy tax credit. Very sustainable injuries there. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.